Welcome back to Tip TV Finance, where I'm joined by somebody who paid nearly as much as me for his for his haircut. I paid 44 quid for three strands, but you were not far off that.
Yes, yeah, I'll leave it at that. I can join the army if it doesn't work out.
Right, well, while I remember, Chris Justum, relationship manager at Seven Investment Management.
Good to see you, Zach, thank you.
Right, how are you today, apart
yeah,
from the...
Yeah, not bad at all.
You look...
Cold. The joke is, basically, genuinely, they said, I'll cut the grey out if you want for your wedding, and I said yes, and then they went to town on me, so good. Won't be returning anytime soon.
Yeah, well, for me, they just cut the hair out, which is not very nice. But you said you wanted to touch upon the banking situation in Europe.
Well, yeah, purely because in the news this morning, we've seen Monse de Paschi's shares shoot up by about 20% as a result of news about this recapitalisation plan. So they're trying to raise about 5 billion euros in order to try and turn around a bank which pretty much has been the worst news story European banking-wise, and that's going some as well, by the way. They failed their liquidity test by the worst margin compared to the rest of the banks. And hopefully, you know, this is something that can get sorted out. I mean, there's a degree of cynicism there from investors because they've already raised about 8 billion and the bank's market value now is only 1 billion. They've got 30 billion in bad debt they want to securitise and get rid of. So I suppose for investors, there's what's actually going on headline-wise and are we interested in it and do we want to take the risk? And we've also got to take into consideration the political risk as well, which is the big overhanging situation at the moment where Renzi's concerned those constitutional reforms.
Well, I mean, it may be an unfair question to ask you, but when are we going to stop trying to save these, you know, pathetic situations? I mean, you know, it'd be cheaper to set up a new bank than bail out these old banks. The RBS thing is just as bad. We'll find out about that this week as well. Mm. It's just embarrassing. They're losing, I don't know how much they're using, a billion a year or a month or whatever it is. just there's no hope whatsoever. And we're still doing it. I mean, it's a bit like a bald man with a comb over. I mean, you know, this is something I can relate to. I mean, you know, you're taking the hair from here and you're putting it there and you're like,
how many hair analogies are you going to be able to get
exactly,
in?
Exactly, yes, but it's all over, isn't it? It's all over for these banks. And, both on the sector is in decline and also just trying to bail them out after the global financial crisis was also a mistake.
I think you make good points. I think the can's been kicked down the road to a degree in the fact this is still rising as an issue. What, how many years on are we now? 7 years on? 8 years on from that whole situation? And I think that the short answer is that from a, what are we doing about it? I mean, the European regulations will state that there isn't allowed to be a bailout because, frankly, the German people, who are the people who would have to put their hands in their pockets, ultimately be the beneficiaries down the road. We've seen the political situation there really escalate and put pressure on Merkel as a result of the fact they don't like the point that they would have to be bailing out banks that ultimately are hundreds of miles away. We saw that with Cyprus as well. We have to talk about bail-ins. And the frightening thing where bail-ins are concerned rather than bail-outs are that the state isn't funding it, i.e. you and me via the government and whatever's going on where Europe's concerned, shortly not to be our problem. But you're talking about a Cyprus situation where all of a sudden someone who's worked very hard, who's put their money into a bank, all of a sudden doesn't realise that they were just putting that in for a deposit and they thought they were getting a service. They become an investor and that money then has to go towards fixing that bank. So what are we doing about it? Well, actually, because we're not going for a bailout from a state point of view and they're having to do it themselves to a degree and raise money, these individuals who do then take that risk are taking a risk with the view that they're going to be getting a return from it. So whether that's retail investors or institutions, there is a risk and return associated with it. So people choose to engage with it or they don't choose to engage with it. And that's why I think you've seen the shares rally today, because you've seen this new CEO come in with what looks like, on a veneer level anyway, a thin veneer level at the moment, a plan that could well work. And it does then hang on what's going on from a political point of view, which is just the situation at the moment in the US, in the UK and in Europe. It's just this constant thing we keep coming back to. What's going on with politics? And in Italy, particularly, where Renzi's concerned, on December the 4th, this whole constitutional reform, the reason that's relevant is that Beppe Grillo, who's on the other side, if you like, of the fence, and the person who is polar opposite to Renzi, is seen as anti-business. And the leader of Fiat.
Yeah, one of those, Vince Cable, he was good at that.
Where's he now, interestingly? Not heard much
from him. On the after-dinner speaker circuit, I think.
The person that foresaw the financial crisis, but not there to fix it at the moment. But But what we've seen was Marchionne, who is the individual who's leading Fiat, who is one of their biggest employers in Italy. You know, they were telling him to go to hell, and they were saying that he was blackmailing and being political with their employees. And the danger is, I suppose, is that if this anti-business sentiment comes through as a result of Grillo suddenly being able to put pressure on Renzi, who said that he'll resign, basically, if these constitutional reforms don't go through, all these businesses suddenly are on a completely new playing field, and something like this new plan in order to put this bank back in shape, which would be the precursor to what's going on with the rest of the banks, suddenly is a big question mark over it.
But from an investment point of view, you know, somebody phones up and says, you know, I really think that banks are a great opportunity. What can you tell them?
Well, from our point of view, I mean, we, as a brief recap, we're top level. We decide what's going on in the world from a macro point of view. And then we either like a region or an asset class, or we don't like a region or an asset class. So if someone wants specific advice from that, frankly, it's not really our bag. If they are someone who is a middle-of-the-road investor and they've picked up a copy of the paper and all of a sudden they think that this is the best idea since sliced bread, it's my job to play devil's advocate to a degree, because investing in something that has got a specific level of volatility in comparison to a bank share that they're buying because they've seen it go up by 20% is like apples and pears. So we wouldn't give them specific advice on it, but it's a really tough one because you don't know what's around the corner. You've got these, they're not even black swan events now with these political situations. It's a genuine factor that we're all having to bring into whatever, I suppose, modelling that we're doing when we're putting together a portfolio.
Yeah, but with the banks, it's quite easy. You just go for the challenger banks, which don't have the risk of a fine, and they don't have the legacy toxic debt on them. So you go for Aldermore and Shawbrook or Virgin Money or whatever it is. You can't even go for Barclays, even if you like Barclays, because every 3 months the Department of Justice slaps it, you know, comes up with some historic allegation and says, you know, we want $5 billion or $10 billion. So all those existing banks are out, only the new ones, which are just, you know, in the high street, the metros, and I don't know if that's listed, but I mean, I think it is. But those challenger banks are the ones to go for.
The ones without the legacy problems, yeah, who do seem more vanilla. And I suppose what everybody craves ultimately is for banks to go back to what they should be and what they used to be a long time ago, which is ultimately acting like a utility, which is they're boring, they don't really do a great deal.
They don't make any money.
Well, no, but this is the point. If you're buying it, you want to know that basically they're doing, they're taking in a certain amount of money and then they're lending that money out at a better rate. So they're making a specific margin. They know what they're making, you know what they're making. They're not getting engaged with all this speculation, all the high-risk activity and all the acquisitions that have seen so many of these banks get in such difficulty that then comes to the point, as you mentioned quite rightly, where we've got a cycle where we've then got to bail them out and the Department of Justice, which is the bogeyman, then comes knocking on the door.
I don't think you have to bail them out, but for some reason it still happens. But in the meantime, Chris Justin, Relationship Manager at Seven Investment Management, thanks for coming in today.
Good to see you, Zach.
With your new look and everything. We'll be back after the break.